Hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. We are delighted to welcome some students today. We have Waukesha South High School. Would those students please stand? We're delighted to have you with us. You may be seated, please. And we have Madison West High School students. Would they stand? We're delighted to have you all with us, too. And Mary Lair attended the Teachers Institute in 2001. Where is the instructor? Good. Thank you for coming back. You all may be seated. The students are with us today as part of a program called Caught with Class. And this is a national award-winning program where high school students from around the state are invited to attend an oral argument. And if they agree to attend, they're sent briefs of the case we're about to hear and may do additional activities relating to this case. And as part of the program, they will meet with a justice of this court at noon after the second case is heard. And there will be a discussion of the procedures that the court uses in taking and deciding cases, but there will be no discussion of the substantive issues of the case. Everyone is welcome to attend that session to meet with the justice and with the students. Let me now introduce the court to you all. Starting on my far right is Justice Patience Rogensack. Seated next to her is Justice Patrick Crooks. Justice Crooks is the justice with whom you're going to meet today, and you'll be joined by other students. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To her left, Justice David Prosser. And on the far left, Justice Lewis Butler. With those preliminaries made, we'll now call our first case, which is 2005 AP 1874, Kimberly Wambolt and Wade Wambolt versus Illinois Farmers Insurance Company et al. Arguing on behalf of the Wambolts is Martha H. Height, and she has 25 minutes, and then we'll get 5 minutes in rebuttal. Counsel?
You said my name's Martha Height. I represent plaintiffs Kimberly Wambolt and Wade Wambolt. This may be a rather dry subject for high school students. It's of great interest in the appellate community because it's the first case ever that really fully addresses, after enactment of 80803, whether an appeal can ever be mandated from a memorandum decision of the circuit court. This case started with a summary judgment motion by Illinois. Well, there were more procedure than this, but there was a motion for summary judgment by Illinois Farmers that came about on a motion for reconsideration. And the trial court granted the motion of Illinois Farmers for summary judgment in a memorandum decision. It was a document clearly labeled memorandum decision. Thereafter, Illinois Farmers filed a notice of entry of order and attached a document labeled memorandum decision, which was the memorandum decision of the court, to the notice of entry. This started the time running of 45 days if the memorandum decision was, in fact, a final order or judgment of the circuit court. Thereafter, counsel for the Wambles, which would be myself, was on notice that of the potential that this might be an appealable order and did some research in the case law and really tried to delve in as best I could to all the ongoing cases, the appellate practice book, and come up with whether this was indeed an appealable order, and this was done because of the notice that was filed and because of my general understanding based on just seemingly understanding among appellate lawyers that a memorandum decision is not appealable. Came to the conclusion based on my reading of the case law and other materials that, in fact, it was not an appealable order or judgment because it lacked specific expressed language of dismissal which would dispose of the action on the merits.
What substantive issues were left after the memorandum decision, which says that the plaintiffs have no viable claim as to Illinois farmers? So what was left to do yet?
What was left to do was dismiss the case on the merits with prejudice and with costs to the prevailing party. This is the final step of the circuit court in tying everything together and actually disposing of the case. There are underlying issues in a case, such as questions of fact or conclusions of law, that could constitute various issues of interest in deciding something. But
well, if there was no viable claim, in other words, there was nothing that could be done, you think that the costs were a substantive issue?
That's clearly, they're not a substantive issue. So the.
I thought you said that.
Normally that would be a step that would be left to be done, but I guess I misstated that what needed to be done was dismiss the case on the merits with prejudice. The ordering of costs is sort of appended onto that, but is not a substantive matter.
Yeah, that's what the difference is with Harder, as far as you're concerned. That in Harder, the order for judgment said this is dismissed with prejudice. And in your case, the memo decision did not say that. Is that how you're distinguishing Harder?
Yes, that's how I'm distinguishing Harder, but it's also how the common thread that runs through all of the key decisions involving what constitutes a final order or judgment. Harder is not unique in that the language focused on by this court was the language of dismissal on the merits. It's also true in the Radoff case, which also involved a summary judgment granted in favor of the defendants. The final judgment, which was determined to be the disposing judgment for purposes of appeal, stated, it is adjudged that the defendants have a judgment against the plaintiffs dismissing the complaint together with the cost. So the clear dismissal language was found in that as well.
Can I just ask this question? And I should have gone back and looked, but I didn't. On August 12th, according to my notes, there was a memorandum decision which Illinois Pharma lost on summary judgment.
Correct.
They didn't appeal that decision. They moved for reconsideration, right?
Yes. I don't believe that the decision denying summary judgment was appealable except through an interlocutory appeal because the case was just going forward then for discovery and trial.
So there was they'd have to ask for leave to appeal. It wasn't a final disposition on that party. Okay.
Clearly that was not, regardless of what the language would have said in the circuit court's order, that would not have been deemed an appealable order.
And that's the distinction between the August 12, 2004 memorandum decision on summary judgment. It doesn't have a final disposition against that party.
There's two distinctions between those orders. The first one could not be a final judgment or order under any circumstances because it did not conclude all of the issues as between the parties. It simply said that the case had to go forward on the merits. Mm-hmm. Also, the language itself clearly did not contain dismissal language because the case wasn't dismissed. The second order was at a point in the case where a dismissal on the merits was warranted, but that hadn't actually happened. So in theory, the court could have drafted an order or final judgment at that point in the action, which concluded it on the merits and there could have been a document that was final at that point.
Counselor, what should we say in this decision if you were to prevail to clear up this? Because we have been really trying hard. Harder was only written 2 years ago, and it was a unanimous decision of this court. We obviously thought we'd made it clear that the intent of the trial judge has nothing to do with whether the order is final, that as a matter of law, we're going to presume intent if all of the substantive issues are decided. But it's obviously still causing trouble. So if you were to give us the magic words, tell me what I should write.
Okay. I think there's a couple possibilities, and I think they both stem from the statute itself, because the right to appeal is statutory. So you always have to start with 80803 sub 1 in order to get to an appealable final judgment or order. There's two requirements under the statute. The first deals with disposing of the case, and that's been litigated at length. The second requirement is that there has to be a judgment, an order, or a disposition recorded in the docket entries. So as an initial threshold question, there has to be something in the memorandum decision that would morph it or make it into somehow an order or a judgment. If it can't hit the order or judgment threshold, I don't think you can get to the second question of whether it disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more parties. There's two different approaches that I would recommend in getting to that order judgment issue. The first was discussed at length in our brief. It's the Rick D. Mueller under no circumstances. It's basically apple oranges. A memorandum decision can't be a final order or judgment. However, based on Harder, I have my doubts that this would be the adopted position of the Supreme Court, so I want to discuss a second option which might be more in line with Harder. In the earlier case law predating 80803 in Inree Baumgardens, the court held that if a memorandum decision was the very last final order of the circuit court, then it could qualify as an order. So that might be one way to make a memorandum decision qualify as an order for purposes of 80803. The Inree Baumgarten case was then picked up again in the Frederick case, where it was cited favorably for the proposition that a order of the court that's a memorandum decision, if it's the very last order of the court, could qualify as an order.
But, Counselor, what if there's a memorandum decision out there, and it goes against me, and I'm one of the lawyers, and I somehow got busy with another case, and I didn't file my notice of appeal, or wasn't quite ready to do it, and so I submit another order to the court, an order of judgment dismissing all claims, one sentence. Isn't taking your suggestion, leaving the court and the finality of decisions subject to some manipulation?
Well, it would be if that was the end of what I'd suggest, but there was two possibilities that I was going to bring up for making the memorandum decision into either the final order or final judgment. The first was if it's the last order in the chain of litigation, it could qualify as final order or judgment. The second would be if the memorandum decision contained clear dismissal language, it might substantively qualify as a final judgment. And I've never seen a case law directly saying that, but there is case law in Frederick saying that orders dismissing an action are appealable because they are, in effect, judgments. So possibly the same rule could apply to a memorandum decision, that if it has expressed language of dismissal, it might qualify as a judgment, and then it would be the final order or judgment. So that would be what I would say is the most important thing, is that however narrow or wide the ruling would be, that a memorandum decision should either, in order to qualify as an order of judgment, should either have to meet one of those two requirements. It'd have to be the final order in the chain of litigation and no additional orders, or it would have to contain clear, express disposal language dismissing the complaint.
Counsel, I'm always concerned that as part of litigation, sometimes parties over-advance their positions and present them in a way that sometimes may cut against what they're trying to do. And so I want to press you because we've talked about whether it should be the last document or the last, well, there can always be another document, so I'm not sure that that answers the question. But let me press you on the order, or the memorandum decision in this case.
Okay.
If you have the same memorandum decision that is issued, but at the conclusion of the memorandum decision, you were to have a paragraph that said, wherefore, it is ordered, or it is adjudged, that this case is dismissed. Otherwise, everything is exactly the same, titled memorandum decision, right down the line. Would that be an appealable judgment or order?
I think that's up to this court, but I would say that is one of the plausible conclusions that I think would work for litigants, because what it would essentially do, it would not allow an appeal from a memorandum decision exactly, but it would say that by this clear order of dismissal language, the memorandum decision is in effect not a memorandum decision, it's an order or a judgment by virtue of that language.
Don't we have a number of decisions that suggest that in the past, both pre and post 80803, that is how we've interpreted 80606 sub 2 or 80711? Isn't that how this Court has interpreted judgment or orders in the past?
I think that's true with respect to orders and orders for judgments. I didn't come across a case where this same rationale was applied to documents labeled as memorandum decision. But I think that that one possible solution to this would be to extend the same reasoning as applies for for judgment to memorandum decisions.
I have a question. The memorandum decision here is signed by the judge, right?
Yes.
Was it filed? I see it's authenticated April 25, which is the date of the memorandum. Was it ever filed?
Yes, it's filed.
So that would then appear to satisfy, let's see, 80, the first section under 80803, because it says it's a signed document that's filed.
Well, I think it would only satisfy that section if it's...
It's final. I understand.
If it's also a judgment or an order, it would have to meet that bar and be filed in order to qualify.
But it looks... It's signed and it's filed.
It's
so at least those two qualifications have been
met. I believe they have.
Under 80803 sub 1, there are the words judgment, order, or disposition. And 80803 sub 1, of course, talks about appeals as of right. Sub 2 speaks of appeals by permission. And it appears that it doesn't use the word or disposition. Now, if I were a second-year lawyer, 2 years out of law school, and hadn't read cases, I would think I probably knew what judgment or order was. That is, you'd go to the form book and you'd see, oh, there's a judgment, and there's an order. Well, pretty simple. What's or disposition?
I believe that or disposition is the only way to read the statute that makes sense is a disposition is a document recorded in the docket entries of 799 cases, traffic regulation cases, or municipal ordinance cases. Otherwise, the statute would simply say that whole set of language would be superfluous if it's a disposition entered in accordance with the judgment statute or a disposition entered in accordance with the order statute, then there really is no point to the language at all. You would just stop with any order or judgment that or disposition that disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more parties.
Or you can say it covers a memorandum decision that has as its final or somewhere in it, this case is dismissed as to Illinois Farmer.
I believe that would work, but there would have to be an intermediate holding that a memorandum decision containing express language of dismissal is similar to an order with express language of dismissal. So therefore, the memorandum decision is substantively a judgment. Because I think the starting point is getting to the judgment or order.
And the label is unimportant. That it's labeled a memorandum decision rather than a judgment or order is not significant. And we have cases that say that, including Harder.
I believe the label memorandum decision is significant. But it's significant in the sense that it summarizes what appears to be the intent of the court in drafting the document. Because of the well-established case law that most people understand that memorandum decisions are not appealable, it seems to express some intent on the part of the circuit court that not to be entering a document that's appealable and is a final order of judgment at that time. However, if the same circuit court seems to be intending merely a memorandum decision in the label, but then goes on and puts clear language of order language with clear language of dismissal, then you have an expression of contrary intent. And I guess it's up to the court to decide what these two different implications of intent would mean in the context of one document. In the WIC decision, the decision was no, never, under no circumstances. It doesn't matter once you put the label on. That's the intent of the circuit court to enter more documents, and even language of dismissal in the final concluding paragraphs would not alter the intent of the court as expressed in the document, so you'd stop there.
Under Harder, I mean, I'm not dismissing WIC, and we didn't specifically overrule it, but under Harder, it would be, clear that if the language that you're suggesting is in the document, that you're saying, but then you're making the one step, and that is it has to be the last document. Of course, this is fitting this case, but under Harder, the memorandum, if it has that language in, it would meet with the Harder requirements of finality.
Well, Harder, in its one-sentence rule, starts with a court enters an order or judgment. So the first step is somehow making it as an order or judgment. And one way to consider a memorandum decision as a judgment would be if it contains clear language of dismissal. A way to consider it an order would be if it's the last document in the chain of litigation. But I think that the cases are contrary, and the missing link in the case law is what to do in this situation where you have a memorandum decision, and there's never been any case saying that a memorandum decision can become an order if it contains clear language, or can become a judgment if it contains clear language of dismissal. I think that would be, that kind of a holding might be consistent with Harder, but it would clearly be inconsistent with WIC. And even though academically the WIC decision seems to leave something to be desired as just saying, here's the label, you're done. It's contrary to some cases that came before and after, but all the same, it's a bright line rule.
Counselor, but Harder does say it does not matter what label is on the document, correct?
I'm sorry?
Harder does say that finality does not depend on the label that's on the document, correct?
It says in the context of discussing orders and judgments, it says that the label doesn't matter, but it doesn't say that the label doesn't matter when it's a memorandum decision.
Well, Harder was an order for judgment, if I recall. That was the label that was on the document.
So it was clearly an order.
But it was an order for judgment. That's what it said.
Correct. So the label, as long as the chain of documents all qualify as orders or as judgments, the label doesn't matter. But the Harder decision doesn't go one step further and say that the label on a document never makes any difference. It doesn't at all.
Do you read Harder as changing the statute any? I know it's not supposed to by a rule, but it doesn't talk about talks about substantive issues rather than final decision about the parties. And sometimes it talks, so it substituted substantive issues. And sometimes it talks about dispose, and other times it talks about decides. Do you view that disposes the statutory language? Is there a difference between dispose and decides? Is there a difference between substantive issues and the language of the statute?
Frankly, it's very confusing for an attorney down in the trenches to figure this out, because the holding stated several times, sometimes it uses the word dispose, sometimes it uses the word decides, but giving Harder the benefit of the doubt, the court doesn't have authority to narrow the appealability of a document less than the language of disposal. Decides has to mean dispose, or something more. It can't mean less, otherwise it wouldn't be in line with 80803. So what I tried to do was read the holding consistent with the looking at the actual order that the court was looking at when it made the determination that this particular order for judgment as a matter of law was final. And in that, the court really focused on the language of dismissal. There was a statement of granting summary judgment that was kind of sort of skipped over, and then the court just really zeroed in on the fact that the court dismissed the case on the merits with prejudice. And I think that's my reading of it, is that that's what it means to decide a case. Decide means dispose, and that happens when the case is dismissed.
Could I ask, is 80803-1 vague? What is entire matter in litigation mean?
I'm sorry?
What is entire matter in litigation mean?
I don't think the statute has never been found to be vague. And as implemented, it seems to be consistent in the sense that it always involves disposal. And when you look at all of the holdings coupled with the actual judgments and orders that actually qualify as final, the ones I found almost uniformly contain this dismissal language. Of course, some won't, because not all cases dismiss the complaint. Some do other things besides dismiss, but where it's a summary judgment type case or a case involving dismissal of the defendant, what's found to be final usually are, I think the ones I looked at all had this dismissal language in the order. There were some cases out there where they don't really show you the whole order and leave it up to your imagination what it says, but where the actual language is exposed, there's language of dismissal.
Well, would you say if something isn't explicitly dismissed, is the entire matter in litigation disposed of?
No. And that's a case where the defendant wins. But, I mean, in a case where the plaintiff wins, the disposal language will be different, and I haven't looked into that as much because there's no dismissal there. You have a judgment for money or something else can happen. But in a case where the defendant prevails, say, in a motion for summary judgment or a motion to dismiss and ends up being dismissed, I don't think there's disposal absent express language dismissing the case.
Thank you, Ms. Counsel. Thank you, Counsel. You have 5 minutes in rebuttal, Ms. Hyde. Counsel, Timothy, is it Iden? Representing Illinois Farmer Insurance Company.
Thank you. The contention of the Womboldts in this case is that under no circumstances does a memorandum decision constitute the final judgment or order that begins the running of the time for an appeal. And that's a label-based argument in this case, and it's a label-based argument that is not consistent with the law that we have seen, certainly in 2004 with the Harder decision, but over the last quarter century, even before that. And the claim that a memorandum decision can never constitute that event which triggers the running of the time for appeal is flawed, really, for two reasons. The first reason is that in 1979, the Frederick Court held that a memorandum decision may constitute an order if that represents the final ruling of the court. That was subsumed in the Harder decision. There's been discussion by the Wombolts that the Wick decision and somehow says that a memorandum decision is never appealable. Again, that's the label-based argument which this court in 2004 very specifically rejected. There's a Fox decision to which we cite the court, where this very court in 1983 had a case that involved an appeal from a memorandum decision. The footnote to the Fox case again cited the Frederick decision for the proposition that a memorandum decision may be appealable if it constitutes the final ruling of the court. And then there's the decisions of the Court of Appeals to which we cite this court in our memorandum.
That may be, I'll accept for the moment that the label memorandum decision does not, under these cases, always mean it's not appealable. I'll accept that for the moment, okay? So what do you look at? We're not going to look at the label. What are you going to look at?
You're going to look at what that document, however labeled or titled, says. And that, too, is something that this court has emphasized. The question came up, what can we as a court do to make it more clear? I don't know, because it seems to me that in the Harder case, the court went to great lengths to emphasize two points. First, that the label that the document bears is not determinative. And second, there was a caution that the last document that's in the court file may not be that which triggers the running of the time for appeal. So what then is important? It's what that document says. And the effect of that document and the intent of that document on its face.
This document says that the motion is granted. That's all.
It did so. It granted the motion, but the language that led up to that pronouncement is important as the court considers its effect in this case. It pointed out that Illinois Farmers Insurance Company came to the court saying that the application of the applicable statute requires their dismissal from the lawsuit. And the judge went on to state, Illinois Farmers is correct. Later in that same document, he made the assertion that plaintiffs have no viable claim as to Illinois Farmers Insurance Company. That all was the preface to the pronouncement that the Illinois Farmers Insurance Company summary judgment motion is granted. So you have pretty strong language that there is that Farmers is entitled to the dismissal they seek, that there exists no viable claim, and that as a result, summary judgment is granted.
Well, let's suppose that this memorandum decision just had the first sentence. This matter came on for hearing upon defendant's motion for reconsideration, period. And then it said, accordingly, for the reasons I explained in the transcript or on the basis of the Minnesota statute, you could say either one, very short, the motion for summary judgment filed on behalf of an Illinois farmer is granted. Is that going to be appealable?
It would be less indicative of the intent of the court as to whether or not that constituted the final document, to be sure. But here we have further explanation.
But the final document ultimately will be an order that just says, it's hereby ordered that the complaint against Illinois Farmer is dismissed with prejudice. I mean, that's very short. You don't have to have you have to have a memorandum decision? Does the trial court have to have a memorandum decision?
It does not.
No, it could just say summary judgment's granted.
It can. But in the context of this case, it not only issued a memorandum decision that said summary judgment is granted, but it said that there exists no viable claim. With that pronouncement, it resolved the question of whether any substantive claim persisted and existed.
Yeah, but you know, previously, the court held against you.
That's correct.
And you filed a memorandum decision, and the court changed its mind. It looked like you were a loser. But then you rescued the case, right? Now it looks like you're a winner with this memorandum decision. But who knows? We've already had one reconsideration. The court changed its mind. Now within 2 weeks, the plaintiff is now moving for reconsideration and clarification. Trial court could change its mind again.
Good.
And so why is this so final?
Because the difference, Your Honor, is that when I was a loser, that was an order from which an appeal could not be taken.
I understand that. But in terms of what the trial court is doing, it tells me this trial court can be reasoned with and can change its mind. So you ran the risk that it could change its mind again.
Did? I did. But the difference was that when it changed its mind the first time, it was changing it from something from which I had no redress at that point.
I understand that. That's why I explored that originally with opposing counsel.
And I think that's a significant distinction, because there was no appeal that could be had under circumstances there. Here now, the court, perhaps not in language that anyone would have preferred, but language that was nonetheless fairly strong in saying that no viable claim exists. It was a different setting, and it gave rise to a different obligation.
I'll tell you what I expected you to answer me, which is that a motion for reconsideration doesn't extend the time for appeal.
That is correct, and counsel has conceded that as well in her submissions.
Counsel, I look at this particular case, and of course we have another case, the next argument, and so that addresses the same issues in a different context. So I want to take the umbrella issues. What are we to do? In preparing for these arguments today, I was reading in a law review article about Wisconsin's enactment of 808.03. And it said, Wisconsin has the cat's pajamas. It said, and it was an article written in 1993, and said, boy, is Wisconsin great. This statute that they're enacting should be replicated around the country. It said this: 60 years ago, Justice Brandeis wisely noted that it is one of the happy incidents of the federal system that a single courageous state, Wisconsin, may serve as a laboratory and try novel experiments without risk to the rest of the country. In enacting the ABA proposal, and that's what Wisconsin did, 808.03, Wisconsin has served as the laboratory for both the federal courts and other states. The experience in Wisconsin indicates that the proposal works well in practice and has minimized litigation over what is a final judgment.
What the justice hasn't told you is that the author of that law review article drafted this.
I know. I didn't rest of the story. Robert Martineau, who used to be in Wisconsin. But nevertheless, reading that sparked my curiosity, that I thought, let's get back to the basics. Let's see if this statute really is as good as he thought it was. And so let's look at the words of the statute. And I say to myself, let's try to keep it simple. Simple with certainty. Keep it simple with certainty. So, 808.03. A final judgment or a final order of the circuit court may be appealed as a matter of right to the court of appeals unless otherwise expressly provided by law. Okay. No big deal. Now we get to the next sentence. A final judgment or final order is a judgment, order, or disposition that disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more of the parties when rendered in an action or special proceeding. So what I want to focus on is what we're looking for is a final judgment or order or disposition that disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more parties. So a final judgment that disposes of the entire matter in litigation. If I were a second-year associate, 2 years out of law school, I'd look at a document and it says judgment, and then I'd say, does it dispose of the entire matter in litigation as to one or the more people? Yes or no? If I was that same second-year person, I'd look at this document called order. Now, if it's an order that says, an order compelling discovery, well, that's not what I'm looking for. It's an order. It says order, and it's an order that disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more party. So I know what I'm looking for. The statute tells me. It's a great statute, according to the author who drafted it. It's an order that disposes of everything as to one or more party. It's a judgment. And then you have this other word, or disposition. And let me say, well, maybe a disposition can be something like a memorandum decision, as long as it has in its text that it is hereby ordered that, or it's hereby ordered, decreed, and adjudged that. So it can be labeled memorandum decision. Who cares what the label says, as long as the text of it has in it, it is ordered, or it is adjudged, or it is a judgment of, or isn't that simple? And then, of course, it has to dispose of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more of the parties. Isn't that simple? Doesn't that provide the certainty, and isn't that what the statute says? I'm concerned. I read the amicus. The amicus says we got lots of cases and cases and cases that don't conform with the words of the statute. What is an associate to do? The amicus says, they're supposed to go to the statutes, but they're not going to find the answer. Why is my proposal infirm?
I'm not sure that it is. I think that certainly it would be helpful if your proposal were in fact adopted. It doesn't change, though, what the statute says. It would perhaps clarify that. But the statute, and as recognized by this very court, says you can't just look at the document and say, it bears this label, so I know that I either need to do something or I need not do something. It instead, you have to look at what the, try just to determine the intent of the author of that document.
Well, see, this intent stuff is just like the last document filed. If I'm driving to my home, if I'm driving to Green Bay, and Justice Crooks, who used to live in Green Bay, says, and you take the last exit. Well, I don't know what the last exit is until I passed it and see there's no more exit, So, that's not all that helpful. Last document, or let's divine what the judge said. I don't know what, I can't divine that stuff. What I'm looking for is a document the label does matter. The label says order, okay? I'm first base. I know I'm half there. Now the next part of the analysis, does it dispose of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more parties? I look at the label, judgment. Almost a home run. Let me look at does it dispose of the entire matter litigation? Or disposition? Not quite so sure, but let me say disposition could be something like a memorandum decision that has the words order or judged in. And if it doesn't have the words order or judged in, you lose. Then it's not final. What do you say about that?
I think that would be a great prospective step. But I don't think it's a reflection on what the law is. And the reason is the statute doesn't have the specificity that you crave here. And instead, it uses those words, judgment, order, or disposition. So we hearken back to is a memorandum decision which says that the moving party is right when it says that it should be dismissed, and it's right when it says there exists no viable current claim. And as a result, it's entitled to summary judgment, is a disposition.
It may be a disposition, but let me focus on the words that disposes of. Now, I know the students must think this is crazy to say a disposition that disposes of. But you can have maybe a number of things that are a disposition, but unless it says it's hereby ordered, it's hereby ordered, adjudged, and decreed, It doesn't really dispose of anything. It's a nice esoteric development of the law. Sounds good to me. It's an action verb, dispose, right?
It is. It is. And in that sense, the corollary is when the court went on to say that because of its finding as to the merits or the lack thereof, that summary judgment is granted. Another action verb, which is in this case akin to the disposition of it. Certainly, if we had the bright line rule that you hearken for in this case, we probably have a lot fewer of these before you. But within the confines of the statute and applying those within the thread of the decision that we've been going through for some length this morning in Harder, and then what a trial court judge did in Northwest Wisconsin, he made it as clear as he could, and there was no doubt in the mind of at least one side that was a victory. I had been a loser before, and I was a victor now.
You were very good about getting a notice of entry right away so that you would limit the time. That was very good. Why didn't you go back and ask the court to say, this is the final order or judgment? We said years ago, if the lawyers and the trial court would put in, hey, this is the one that you appeal from. Right? That's all you have to do. This meets 808, whatever the number is. You didn't do that. No one did that. Why shouldn't the court say, you know, Martineau drafted this. He thought it was just the best thing that was possible as of 93. He doesn't cite, I don't think, to some of the cases we had as of 93 that raise questions about this. Cites only to ones that are clear relating to finality. Why shouldn't we say, look, appealability ought not to be a trap for lawyers? We ought to not, in effect, it's a default when the lawyer doesn't file on time and wanted to file an appeal. We ought to be liberal in allowing lawyers to file. This lawyer wrote the court, raised the question. Court didn't respond as such, although on the other side of it, she did have 3 days in which to file the notice of appeal, because as I calculated it, June 9th was the last day, and court order came down June 6th. But why don't we say, hey, look, just look at the issues in this case and the problems. And it was timely for the document that was finally labeled order, and just let it go. I mean, let's do substance over form. Let's do liberal pleadings. You know, let's be sensible. We can't solve this problem, apparently. I mean, the court's tried. Can't get the lawyers to put in, this is the final judgment. Can't get the court to put in, this is the final judgment. Heck with it. If you're anywhere in the neighborhood, you can appeal. It's a big neighborhood. I mean, within reason. This is not so unreasonable. It was, let's see what I have that. It was 79 days after the memorandum decision, 37 days after June 6th. If you hadn't filed a notice of entry, 79 would have probably been okay. Right?
Right.
Because you otherwise. So, I mean, come on. Let's get to the merits. Let's really deal with the case instead of horsing around with closing the court's doors.
I understand.
Reasonable to me.
Well, I understand the concern, but the law, unfortunately, imposes those deadlines, not only in this arena, but elsewhere. We have the injured person who limps to the courthouse only to find that the statute of limitations has run the day before, and we don't horse around with that person. And we have these
Oh, yeah, we do. We have discovery. We have closed courthouse rules. There are ways of getting around that. But I agree with you, and, of course, that's very different because we've said that is not only late, the remedy is gone. So, and I understand there have to be rules, and we have to be precise, but we're having trouble here.
You know, certainly in retrospect, probably a lot of things might have been done differently. You asked why I didn't go back to the court. And the candid answer is because I read this as being very determinative and dispositive of the claims as against my client.
And that's obvious by your notice of entry.
Right.
I mean, you didn't hide this. This isn't with you hiding this from the other side. You are very open. You put them on notice.
And as the court pointed out, perhaps the prudent thing had the Wombolts, you know, they obviously had a concern about what was running at this time. Perhaps prudence would have required that they err on the side of caution and go forward with the appeal.
And Martineau says if you're too early in the Court of Appeals, the Court of Appeals shouldn't dismiss it. They shouldn't get you coming and going, but hold it until all the documents are done.
And that's what we've seen. And so that's the side of caution in this case. But again, I'll hearken back to the fact that really it isn't perhaps as confusing as it might seem at this point, because the court 2 years ago did a good job of laying out its concerns and its rationale and providing and using the term we caution. And so, you know, the appellate practice section has taken the position that it should be enacted in a rule that would clarify it, because that's where people typically look first. But I'm not aware of the law having a preference for one forum versus another, and the forum of the Harder case lays it out fairly succinctly, both historically and prospectively.
Counsel, is this a final, the memorandum decision that was rendered in this case and subsequently entered, is it your position that this was a final judgment or a final order?
The final order or final disposition is our position on this. It doesn't have the judgment label, but it was a final determination or disposition as contemplated under the statute. And if I may, the fact that the court later issued that pronouncement where it said, and by the way, this, now we're going to go forward as to Illinois Farmers Insurance Company, is unquestionably something that can't be considered, because that the court took further action only because one of the parties had this question that it brought before it. But that doesn't change the fact that what it did earlier was final as to Illinois Farmers Insurance.
And I want to focus in, because I know that the statute uses the words final disposition, but it also, under sub one, says a final judgment or final order is a judgment, order, or disposition that disposes of the entire matter in litigation as to one or more of the parties when rendered in an actual in an action or special proceeding, and that is one of the following: A, entered in accordance with section 80606 sub 1B, or 80711 sub 2. And so I guess my question is, with respect to the memorandum decision that was entered in this case, was that entered, according to your position, your client's position, under 80606 sub 1B or 80711 sub 2?
80711 sub 2, it was an order.
Could I ask this question? In this case, the plaintiffs sued a defendant and three insurance companies. And Illinois Farmers was the last insurance company to get a decision. Is that right?
Actually, what happened was the first of the insurers that was sued settled with the plaintiffs. The remainders were West Bend Mutual and Illinois Farmers. And West Bend took the position that its obligation to pay, if any, was subordinate to that of Illinois Farmers, and that's something with which the court agreed initially, and then as part of that same order initially denied Farmers' motion for summary judgment. We then brought the motion for reconsideration. So West Bend Mutual remains in the periphery of this case if the other layers of underinsured motorist coverage are, in fact, exhausted.
So you were not the last insurance company then?
No. I was in the middle.
The case is proceeding against other parties here.
Certainly. Certainly. And whether or not the case will proceed, there's been no determination as to whether there's an arbitration clause as to those and whether they would invoke that. But certainly as to Farmers, we took the position, obviously, with the filing of the notice of entry that it was dispositive as to my client.
But could I ask you on 80803, in your opinion, did the memorandum opinion dispose of the entire matter in litigation? I'm interested in what other people are focusing on different words. I'm interested in that word entire. Entire, to me, sort of, it's like 100%, but maybe that's not correct.
My reading of the statute is that what triggers it is the disposition of the entire matter as to one of the parties. Certainly, I can't speak to whether there remains a claim against the other insurer in this case, but when the court pronounced that there exists no viable claim, that what my reading of that was that it was dispositive of any claim against my client, the second of the insurers in line.
You read entire litigation with the next phrase, as to one party or more parties. Entire yes. Litigation as to one party or
right.
But the entire litigation being disposed of does not require a dismissal.
No. No, it doesn't require a dismissal. It simply requires a disposition of that one party.
Yeah, but you view it as a dismissal. You are dismissed from that case, aren't you?
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
You are dismissed from that case.
I am.
So the disposition here is your motion for summary judgment was granted, which means you are out of there.
I am out of there. Correct.
I want to just follow up on that. You've said the memorandum decision, I think I heard you, is really under the statute a disposition that disposes of the entire thing. So between the words final a final judgment or final order is a judgment, order, or disposition. You're suggesting that it's the disposition. Judgment, order, or disposition. And yet, you're saying, although it's a disposition, it's filed as an order. That would be under 80711-2.
Well, I'm saying, again, hearkening back to what the court has told us, is that it isn't the label, it's the effect on it. And whether, I guess the question is, why should the ultimate result be different if the circuit court judge had labeled this document on April 25th order versus memorandum decision, because the substance of it is the same?
I agree with you. I guess my question was an attempt to point out that it's a little, there's some tension going on in here. That is, on one hand, and I agree with you that this would come under disposition, but then it isn't just any old disposition. We've discussed it has to be a disposition that disposes of the entire matter as to one or more parties. And it has to be entered or filed or recorded in a certain way. And you're saying this is a disposition that is entered as an order.
Correct.
Counsel, and this would be prospective because I want your honest appraisal, not relating to your case. Suppose that we, instead of this, it's a good idea for you all, including the trial judge, to put in, this is the final judgment or order from which appeal is taken. Maybe we should say that if the if it's not put in, if that language is not put in to a document, then you interpret it against the respondent, and you say it's not the final doctrine. So here, you got a fight on your hands on this. We got cases every which way. I mean, I'm trying to, I don't know if that's true, but at least the parties would indicate that cases don't line up perfectly. So why not say, either you put it in or it's held against you?
Prospectively, I have no objection to that. And I can assure the court that among the lawyers here today that we will certainly be proactive in that regard, regardless of what, having gone through this now.
Right.
So, very
okay.
Good.
Counsel, if I could, sorry, one final question. Butler. Mm-hmm. I know your argument stems from the Frederick decision, and I always like to go back to the facts of the case to see how they match up with the facts of the case that are before us. And as I understand the per curiam decision of this court in the Frederick case, the court was dealing with an order that granted the defendant's motion to dismiss at the close of the plaintiff's case. The order dismissed the action as to all defendants on the merits with prejudice and with statutory costs to the defendants. And the reason why the case came before this court as to the issue of whether or not that was a final document is because the court subsequently entered a final order of judgment on about 2 weeks later, and then a judgment 2 weeks after that. So there were three different documents that were entered in that case. But the first one granted the motions to dismiss, ordered the case dismissed, and dismissed with prejudice on the merits and awarded costs. It seems to be in a little bit different posture than the cases before us right now.
Certainly that the order in Frederick contained more specificity, but what the Supreme Court did was reject the concern of the Court of Appeals that the fact that there were these subsequent developments within the case at the trial court level somehow changed the tenet of what had happened initially. But certainly I would agree that it's different from what we have here. But the fact that Frederick to this case speaks to the proposition that although Judge Gableman issued a subsequent order, it didn't change what happened on April 25th.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Height, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
The point of the exercise isn't to create a rule that tests the mettle of practitioners and creates confusion. The idea is to come up with a way of doing this that makes it relatively simple to determine which is the appealable document. In regard to memorandum decisions, from the earliest case law, they've either been not appealable or they've been appealable only in limited circumstances. In the cases where they've been held appealable, it's been to save the appeal. There haven't been cases where they're held appealable to eliminate the rights of the litigants. Any change in the law at this point opening the door to allowing appeals from memorandum decisions, I think, should be very limited, because this is one rule that apparently appears to have gotten through to most of us down in the trenches. We basically, talking to people, the general understanding is there's no appeal from a memorandum decision. That changes. It may take a little while to get the change across to people. So far, the rule hasn't created, the general rule of no appeals from memorandum decisions hasn't created tons of litigation. Basically, there's almost a complete dearth of litigation. In other words, the current situation has worked rather well, and change is venturing into new ground when this door is open. And I would ask that any decision in that regard be very narrow and allow only limited circumstances at the most for appeals from memorandum decisions. Otherwise, I think it's clear that most, in the context of dismissal-type motions, most memorandum decisions which discuss the opinion and decision of the court will, in a sense, touch on all of the issues and come up with something that decides an issue. And in the absence of clear, strong, order-type language of dismissal, most memorandum decisions involving summary judgment or in many other cases will arguably decide issues and therefore could, under a very, very broad reading, harder qualify as an appealable document. This will mean that if and oftentimes the memorandum decision comes down almost contemporaneously with the other documents, so a memorandum decision might be issued one day by the court and 2 days later the other documents come down. I think it would create a lot of confusion because most people will assume that the first order and judgment is the appealable document in a situation where there's three contemporaneous, and going to have situations where the winning party would put in a notice of entry of judgment with the judgment, and then the plaintiff would say, well, I have 90 days. They didn't notice entry the memorandum decision. It decided everything. You know, and so it's going to work on both sides of the fence to create confusion if there isn't really a clear decision as to how this whole thing works. I wanted to comment on the issue of whether the memorandum decision is a final disposition under 80803. I don't think that the statute can be read that way. In order to be a final disposition, it would have to be entered under 80606, in other words, be a judgment. It would have to be entered under 80711, an order, or it would have to be recorded in the docket entries. I think the point of the disposition language is to allow appeals from certain proceedings that are not subject to orders and judgments. And
there's also, only three of them listed. Why wouldn't it be recorded in the docket entries? Why wouldn't a memorandum decision be recorded in the clerk's docket entries?
Okay. Docket entries of Chapter 799 cases.
Oh, I see. 799 is small claims. Okay.
Yeah, there's three specific kinds of docket entries that qualify. So I think that the memorandum decision has to be an order. And consistent with that, Illinois Farmers did attach the memorandum decision to their notice of entry of order. In the event that the memorandum decision is somehow qualifies as a disposition, then the notice of entry of order would not be valid either because it should have said notice of entry of disposition or memorandum decision. And I think the real question here is what are the circumstances under which a memorandum decision is substantively not what it says it is substantively something else, an order or judgment for purposes of appeal, and what circumstances would that change happen? As long as a memorandum decision sticks to being a memorandum decision and states the meaning and decision of the court listing all the issues and stuff, but doesn't lapse into hereby ordered language and creates really strong expressed language of dismissal, then it should be what it says it is. I wanted to comment that there is a case, the Contrardi case, where which involved an order, not a memorandum decision, and the court, it concluded that summary judgment was granted. It's not so clear, but later on in the decision at page 516, the decision also states that, quote, the court dismissed American Family, and then another quote, from all liability for the claims and causes of action alleged by the plaintiffs, unquote. In other words, even in that case where it involved an actual order, not a memorandum decision, granting summary judgment, the order also included clear dismissal language. And I think to be consistent, that even an order granting summary judgment should not qualify as a final order or final judgment for purposes of appeal because it does not dispose of the entire matter in litigation with respect to one or more parties.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Ms. Hyde. Thank you, Mr. Hyden, for arguing yet another case before us as to what constitutes a final judgment or order for purposes of tallying the days for appeal. That concludes our discussion of 2005 AP 1874, the Wombouts versus Illinois Farmer Insurance Company. The court will take a few moments of recess to allow these students to leave.